Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah. That's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Toy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer, the Houston Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
Dunkle.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Beautiful, colder weather here. I'm enjoying it.
That's so cute. That's pretty cute. I like that. The Mellow Rose of Texas. I like that. Oh, are we on?
The Mellow Rose of Texas.
I'm sorry, that was one of their, I'm reading off the, anyway, we'll find out about that in a little bit. I was jumping ahead there. That was cool. I saw that one on the, are we on? We're on.
We're on air. We're on air. I was letting you go there. I thought, you know, hey,
no,
you
know. I didn't have anything to, I'm just looking at the website for tonight's guest, and I was looking at the wine list and blah, 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 and I thought that was cute, so there we go.
Yeah, I know which one you're referring to. I was looking at that too, yeah.
The red, yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you.
Good night, everyone. Oh, we want to apologize for last week, too, because I wasn't on last week. I was unable to speak. Sinus problems and all sorts of congestion and everything, and lost my voice. Actually, lost my voice Thursday and Friday. So it was a no-show for me, and Mike only found out later in the afternoon on Thursday and did not have time to prepare. So,
unlike you, because you have this knowledge, just like you come up with it, you find out you don't have a guest one day, you know, one afternoon, and that evening you have a complete 1 hour show done. And you have that, you know, and I can look up stuff, and you know, but I just, in that amount of time, I was like, oh, no.
So, well, you know, I mean, you know, you can always do the best of Mike.
If I would have had a show, my show would have sounded like this. And
for an hour.
For an hour, yeah. Oh my gosh, like, I'm going. Yeah, so that wouldn't have been exciting. But, okay.
But thanks, everyone, for hanging in there with us, though, and coming back this week. We do appreciate it.
Very cool.
But I'll let you go get our guest, and I'm going to talk a few minutes while Mike is going to get our guest about What's coming up Sunday? Sunday is, according to Joy's Joy of Wine, and if you do not subscribe to that blog, I highly recommend it. It's a very good blog. Joy's Joy of Wine, .blogspot.com. She is saying that this coming Sunday is National Wine Day. Yay! So, actually, I probably should have done some sound effects on that. We have all these sound effects here, and that's what they're for. So, Sunday is National Wine Day.
Ooh.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. I don't know. I say Sunday's National Wine Day simply because Joyce says this, but I was just talking to my engineer, and she was saying, didn't we just have a National Wine Day about 6 months ago? And I was thinking, yeah, maybe we did. But, hey, who cares? We can have a National Wine Day every month as far as I'm concerned. So this coming Sunday, the 25th, dig out your bottle of wine, dig out your good stemware, and or stemless ware, which is just as good as stemware, and clean out your wine cellar and visit a winery and enjoy National Wine Day. Don't forget this Sunday is also Memorial Day weekend, also the Indy 500 if you're into the racing that's coming up this Sunday also. So it's a good day to grab your glass of wine and enjoy everything. So don't forget, mark your calendar, save the date, Sunday, National Wine Day. And we'll all enjoy our glasses of wine coming up on that day. Mike is still checking out. I'm going to tell you something else, too. Jamie Good, I mentioned this before. Jamie Good, who is an author, and he writes an article about wine for British magazines and stuff, just came out with the second edition of the book called The Science of Wine, the 2014 edition. It is great. I just received this last week. I started to already look through it and read some of the stuff in it. If you really want to get into the meat of wine a little bit more, The Science of Wine by Jamie Good, G-O-O-D-E. It is available on Amazon. So I just, no plug because I don't get any advertising dollars, but it is a good book. It looks like we have our guest standby here. So Ray Hack, is that how you pronounce it, Ray Hack?
You got it, Ron. It's just like a hacksaw.
All right, Ray Hack of Hack Vineyards and Winery, Santa Fe, Texas. And he's going to be our guest tonight here. Welcome to the program, Ray. Glad to have you on.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
We haven't had a Texas guest in a few months here. I mean, we've been on Texas, and I've been trying to contact Texas wineries, and for some reason, y'all are very busy down there, or I don't know what it is, but I'm having a heck of a time, but I'm glad you are able to join us. So where is Santa Fe? Where is it located?
Well, I like the joke, Ron. Everybody's heard of Santa Fe, and they think we're just right outside of Taos, New Mexico. We have name recognition, and nobody knows where we're at. So I'm going to explain to you where we're at. We're just south of Houston, Texas, on the Gulf Coast, actually closer to Galveston Island than we are Houston, about 20 miles north-northwest of Galveston Island, and we're still in Galveston County. And from Houston, we're about 30 to 35 miles south-southwest of Houston.
Oh, so you're down in the corner.
Yeah. And the way we received our little town's name, our little city of Santa Fe is about 12,000 population, so it's a little bedroom community from several surrounding industrial complexes, Texas City, Texas, and Chocolate Bio, and like that. But the Santa Fe Railroad has been here before the Indians were here.
Oh.
And our school system was named Santa Fe Independent School District since its beginning. And we used to be called Alta Loma, which stands for Highland. So I like to joke about that. We're about 25 feet above sea level, and the air is real thin up here.
Oh, wow. 25 feet, that would make it thin, yeah. I know what you mean. I travel inland here to Florida where it's like 35, 40 feet above sea level, and I have trouble catching my breath, too. So, it's understandable.
Yeah, you got to carry an oxygen bottle with you.
Almost, yeah.
Anyway,
go out of
state. That's how we got our name.
Well, good. We a little small town not too far from us here in Pasco County down here in Florida called San Antonio. And so,
yeah.
We get our share of people talking about, San Antonio, so I know what you mean by,
Yeah, yeah. They know where it is, but they don't have a clue.
That's right. Hack Vineyards and Winery. Tell us the how you got started. Tell us your beginning story.
Well, it's interesting, and I'm going to tell it, and I'm going to tell you listeners if they have the time to go to our website at hackwine.com, www.hackwine.com. It's singular. There's a little video on there, about a three-minute video, and it's going to tell you exactly what I'm about to tell you. My sweet little wife, we were married 10 years, and on our 10th wedding anniversary, I graduated after 11 years of night school, and I got my engineering degree, graduated from University of Houston with an electrical engineering degree. So my precious little wife came home on our anniversary evening and had purchased two grapevines from a local nursery, and she gave them to me, and she said, here, put these outside in the garden. Now, neither she nor I drank wine, knew anything about wine, didn't grow grapes, knew nothing about it. And that was the very beginning of the seed because I got bit by the bug. I put those little guys out. The first year they produced great clusters, and the rest is history. That was 45 years ago.
Wow.
So I planted my first vines 45 years ago.
Well, obviously the first vine, but, that wasn't a wine vine for
that's what I made with it. The very next year, I put in 30 vines so I could make some homemade wine. That was the idea that popped up.
Uh-huh.
We had several acres out here in the country, and I thought it might be fun to make a little homemade wine. So I began to do that, and probably 12, 14 years into that hobby, I discovered an incredible hybrid grape that was developed in Florida.
Yeah.
So I got my hands on some vines, about 150 rooted cuttings and rooted vines, and put them in the ground. We started making some pretty nice wines from it. And as I got a little more serious about it, I said, I got to go visit these folks that came up with this vine and visit the ones making wine with it. So I went out to Lake, what's the winery in Florida? I'm sorry, I just went blank.
Lake Ridge?
Lake Ridge.
Lake Ridge. Lake Ridge.
Jeannie Burgess.
Yeah, Jeannie Burgess. Lake Ridge. I think she moved on. I think she's at another winery now.
Well, last I heard, she's vice president or president, rather, over a couple of wineries in Florida, but she may not be at winery.
Last time I talked to her, she was at somewhere else.
Okay.
But knowledgeable, awesome. Very knowledgeable girl.
Yeah, she was a very nice lady. She was very helpful and very kind and accepted my wife. And we had a couple of my daughters with me on the trip, and we walked through and did a tour of their winery and looked at their vineyards and said, wow, this is great. So she was part of the encouragement along the way.
Yeah, she is great, and she, like I say, she's very knowledgeable. And that's a great little winery out there that they have. Lake Ridge is just a beautiful winery.
It is, it sure is. Yeah, I think don't they own about two or three wineries in Florida, something like that?
Actually, corporations. They have Lake Ridge is the main one, but up in St. Augustine there is Sebastian winery. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
That's the other one up there. Those are the two big ones. They have little outlets. They sell their wine all over the state. I mean, they got a good distribution system. You can get it just about everywhere. So
that's great. That's good.
Yeah. So you planted a bunch of grapes and started to make it. Was everything the Blanc de Bois?
No, actually, in the beginning, not knowing anything about what grapes would do well here, I just went out and bought what was available, which was local American grapes like Concord and Champanelle. If you ever heard of Champanelle?
Oh, yeah.
It's a hybrid grape. So anyway, some hybrids. and I put 30 vines in right out my back door and started growing those guys. And I found out I was supposed to wait a couple of years before we let them make grapes. And I did that. And so third, fourth, fifth year, I began to make a little bit of wine and was having a blast. And I had 30 vines, and we had more acres out back. So I told my wife, I said, you know, if 30 vines is fun, 300 vines would even be more fun. She thought I lost my mind. So
yeah.
So we went out back and plowed and disced up the fields and put in the posts, and my friends came and helped me. We stretched wire and run trellis, and then I brought in what I shouldn't have. I brought in vinifera. I was told by the experts you can't grow vinifera down here on the Gulf Coast. And I was thinking, well, now how do these guys know that? Nobody's grown vinifera, Cabernet. I mean, how would they know that? So I put in 150 hybrids and 150 vinifera, Cabernet Sauvignon, Petit Syrah, and Merlot. And then I began to read about Pierce's disease and Zalella fastidiosa. And I'm thinking, well, maybe they do know something. So they got to be right. 6 years later, all 150 vinifera died.
Yeah.
Just about the same year. So we went back to the blackboard and erased that part of it. And about that time, I discovered Blanc de Bois. And so I said, wow, what a great grape. And it's really interesting because we do have freezes here on the Gulf Coast in Florida. You don't have a lot of freezes.
No,
thank goodness
we don't.
You have citrus industry and everything can't stand that anyway. So anyway, I ordered my 150 Blanc de Bois vines, and lo and behold, they came in January in little cups, and they were green and spring looking, and we hadn't been through winter yet. So I put them in the ground, and then we get a damn freeze, pardon my French, and I had to replace those, so we had a little restart, but that's part of farming.
It is all part of grape growing. Yeah. Oh,
yes,
that's sad. I had 1,800 grapes in the ground, and a hurricane went through and drowned them. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I know. I cried just like probably did.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we have. Like I say, I'm 20 miles as a crow flies from Galveston. And, what is it? 5 years ago with Ike, I guess 5 or 6 years ago. I come right through here, and we did really well. We had a couple of end posts broken off, and very very minor damage to the winery. Of course, the winery was built to stand 125 mile an hour wind, so
good.
So it held up, yeah.
That's in the areas that we live, we have to be prepared for that. Yes. So then you put the Blanc de Bois in the ground.
And it began to make some really nice wines. And I just continue to work with it, talk with experts, take classes. And so, you know, even you learn how to make good wine. folks were wanting to buy our wines, and we weren't commercial, and we couldn't do that. And so somewhere around 1997, actually the year before that probably, my wife and I had several businesses. I had become self-employed, and one of our businesses we had was a convenience store, and we had a liquor license to sell beer and wine. Well, as you know, the three-tier system won't allow you to have but one license. You can't have a wholesale and a retail or, you know, anything like that. So we couldn't
sell
the winery, and that probably saved me a few million dollars early on. So before I got into the black hole business. We finally sold a convenience store, not to build a winery, but just decided, you know, I was 65 years old. I said, you know, it's about time to retire, take life easy, I thought.
Yeah. Right.
Didn't realize what workaholics my wife and I were. So when the dust settled, we looked around at each other, and we didn't have much going on. We said, you know what, we've got capital, and we don't have a license anymore. We could build a winery.
Yeah, well,
and that's what we did. So we spent our children's inheritance.
There you go. I like
so
that
now
thought.
Our children are interested in the winery now. So we have.
Well, I noticed the names on there. Your two girls' names are on the ones part of the listing of the people who work there. So, you know,
yes,
they obviously
yes.
are really tied up with the whole thing.
You bet. You bet. We're really blessed in many ways. I think my engineering background prepared me very well for the wine industry and for winemaking and for running a business and our experience with our own businesses. But one of my daughters, Cecilia, was an electrical engineer with Dow Chemical, and she just retired a few years ago, and she spent the last 15 years in HR, as an HR manager. So what an asset. She's a really great asset for us. And the other daughter, Bridget, graduated from Texas A&M with a master's in information technology and a BS in accounting. So she does all of our bookkeeping and payroll and things like that. So it's like ready-made.
That's right. You got them all right there. Then you have your vineyard and you built your winery, and then what did you do?
Well, first of all, I was so naive, and we had a couple of grand openings, and we've been here all our lives, so we knew a lot of folks. We got a lot of relatives, so. We had two grand opening weekends. One of them was dignitaries and VIPs, and we had probably 150, 200 folks came out.
Wow.
Had a great time, had great food and great wine. And then the next weekend, we had close friends and families, and they all came out, another 150 or so folks, and great food and great wine. They went home, and the next weekend, we sat around and looked at each other, and we said, where's all the customers? where are they?
Where is everyone?
So we decided marketing is going to be an important part of our operation. So we just slowly started going out and doing direct sales. In Texas, we're fortunate that we can distribute our own wines directly.
Oh,
so
very good.
My wife and I hit the trails, started selling in package stores and grocery stores. And we at one point, we were selling and shipping about 2,500 cases just outside of the winery alone.
Wow.
And, it was keeping us busy for old people.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So,
and you were
so
making the wine all this time?
Oh, yeah. I was the only guy doing all that. I'd make the wine and then put it in cases and labels and box it up and then put it in a van and then go off and sell it. And come back and make some more. So, I was a busy old guy. And then we were doing a lot of events. We figured we had to attract people to come to the winery. We built a very pretty winery, so it's, I like to call it a destination winery. And so we have pavilions and tables. We do weddings. Currently, we have an on-staff chef and sous chef and a complete kitchen staff. Walk-in cooler, walk-in freezer. We can seat about 250 folks for formal dining. So We've grown.
That sounds like it, yeah.
We're currently, our wines are distributed throughout Texas by Republic National Distributing Company. It's one of the top two or three, I guess, wine and spirits distributors in America. I think they're in about 14, 16 states, maybe.
Yeah, I've heard of Republic, yeah.
Yeah, they've been around a long time. And
they have.
So they're doing a nice job for us. Texas is a huge market. And I was not aware of that until I spent all this time learning. But Texas is like the fourth largest wine-consuming state in America.
Yeah. It's,
so it's amazing. You know, we're known as a beer state, and that's true. We do drink a lot of beer in Texas. But because the state is so dang big, even though our per capita consumption is small, that small consumption per capita runs into a lot of cases of wine when you multiply the total population.
That's right.
So,
when you have 10 people, they drink a bottle. But when you have a million people, they each drink a bottle. It makes a difference, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's worked out really well. And I've got a full-time outside sales representative, state sales manager for our brand. And I help do with some of the marketing and sales presentations. We're in some of the bigger chains, Kroger, grocery chains, HEB. Grocery stores, Specs Liquors, got about 130 stores in Texas. We're in all their stores. So we got quite a bit of distribution, and we ship to about, I want to say, I don't know if I'm exactly right here, 10 or 12 states. you can go on our website and order any of our wines. In fact, we can ship to Florida. So if any of your listeners there would like to check out our website and try some Texas wines from our winery, we'd be pleased to ship them some.
Well, that is a real possibility. We'll have to look at that as a future thing here. Tell us about, let's go into the winery here. What do you use? Oak? Do you use stainless steel? Do you use plastic? What is your methods?
Okay, we currently make Ron about 18 different styles of wine, and let me try to run you through all of them. But the Blanc du Bois is an incredible grape. We make 7 different styles of wine just from Blanc du Bois.
Wow! And sweet, dry, semi-sweet, semi-dry.
Yeah, like that. Port, blush, Madeira. We have a Surly barrel fermented Blanc du Bois. It's our reserve. And then we have a dry Blanc du Bois, stainless steel fermented. We have a stainless steel fermented off dry, which is kind of like a Riesling. Nice tropical fruit flavor. And then we have a sweet style, which is about 5% residual sugar, and it's more the Moscato comes out. It has, I don't know if you're familiar, if you looked up any on the Blanc du Bois origin, but it has golden muscat in its parentage along with Carmen.
Yeah, it's a Florida grape. I'm really familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, and it really likes Texas weather. We have many, many more acres in Texas of Blanc du Bois than Florida does.
Yeah.
We have over 300 acres of Blanc du Bois in Texas.
I didn't realize
and
that.
And I'm the largest producer of Blanc du Bois in Texas, probably. Well, that's my claim to fame. You know, not that everybody's heard of Blanc du Bois, but they will. Before I'm through, they will.
They will,
because,
that's right.
I make Madeira from Blanc du Bois, and last year I submitted 3 Madeira Blanc du Bois of ours to Vienna, Austria International Wine Competition, the largest competition in Europe. And those 3 wines, one won a gold and the other 2 won silver.
Congratulations.
Wow. The point being is it stands up against European varietals and vinifera just as good as anything else. So you can't discount it just because it's a hybrid. Many of the vinifera hybrids, now they're not man-made, they're natural-made, but they're still hybrids. So
right.
Hybrid is not a bad word.
No,
so
no
you have
not
to get
at all.
Past that.
Yeah, people think hybrids, and they start, you know, all this GMO stuff going around and everything, and people get scared. But it's nothing to be scared of, you know.
No. I mean, like I said, Chardonnay and Cabernet, they're hybrids themselves.
They are hybrids, yeah. Natural. But
natural. I mean, they're occurred by nature, but still, they're crosses between 2 or 3 different grape varieties. And so
that's right.
Man is just doing what nature does when we make a hybrid. University of Florida did an excellent job, I feel, with the Blanc du Bois.
Yeah, there's and Stover and Lake Emerald and some of those, too. I don't know if you've tried the Lake Emerald that they make. That's a great grape, too. And it was probably grown well there in Texas.
Yeah, I have tried it when I was there at Lake Ridge, and it was a nice wine. You're right.
Yeah, and it probably would be a good Texas grape, too, because of the climate and everything.
Yeah. But what Texas, beside our Blanc du Bois, what Texas is really beginning to excel in, and that's Mediterranean varietals. And we have the heat and the sunshine like Spain and Portugal, Italy. And so what's beginning to surface for us are grapes like Tempranillo, Malbec, Sangiovese, Mourvedre, Syrah. That's some reds that we're doing well with. And and Tannat, just recently Tannat, which, as you're probably aware, Uruguay has been doing real well with Tannat.
Right.
Recently.
Yeah.
And so we have some very similar growing conditions as those parts of the world, and that's what you start with. And then the white wines, Roussanne, Viognier, Moissan, Muscat, Pinot Grigio, some of those are doing real well. I'm very happy with the Blanc du Bois, and so I haven't chosen to make any other wines besides. I started out with a few because I didn't know any growers in Texas 14 years ago, and I had to import in some wines out of state, and so I had made a few Chardonnays and whatever, but I'm committed to making all Texas-grown wines, and so that's what we try our best to do. Last year we had freezes in May. We had four freezes in May. Nobody in Texas harvested red grapes last year. There's no 2013 red grapes in Texas.
Really? I haven't heard that.
Oh, yeah. And then we already had one freeze this year, right after bud break. And so most of them got secondary buds to come out. And so we're keeping our fingers crossed. I think we're going to wind up with some red wine this year. And we're as excited as heck as we can be. But back to the winery. So, as you know, we're on the coast, and we have Pierce's disease. I can't grow red wines here, vinifera especially. I did grow Black Spanish, or Jacquet is another name for Black Spanish. And it didn't do well for me here on the Gulf Coast. So I pulled it out and replaced it with Blanc du Blanc. But I have growers about 100 miles inland from the coast that's growing Jacquet for me. And I make port from it, and I make a rosé, and I make Madeira. And they does really well. But when it comes to the vinifera now, they come off. I have growers up on the high plains of Texas. Are you familiar with that appellation, the high plains appellation of Texas?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we are, yeah.
It's really, really nice. Of course, we have the hill country appellation. But up on the high plains, my grower's in Brownfield, Texas, just a little bit south of Lubbock. And he's got a little over 250 acres, and he grows Tempranillo, Malbec, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot for me. He grows a bunch of others, right? And it does a really great job. It's very similar to Mendoza, Argentina. It's 3,500 feet above sea level.
That high and there? Wow.
It's very high. It's the Kep Rock. I tell you what, Texas is so dang big. And the High Plains Appalachian, do you have any idea how many acres the High Plains Appalachian consists of?
No, I don't.
It's 8 million acres. That's the Appalachian
State.
That's been approved by the federal government, 8 million acres on the High Plains. Now, I got thinking about that. I said, 8 million acres. My mind just can't hardly get around 8 million acres. I wonder how
around
big
that.
Acres.
I know.
So I started looking at some of the states in America. And you know what will fit within 8 million acres?
Well, I would not venture to guess.
New Jersey and Connecticut, both of them.
Both would.
those two states will fit within the High Plains Appalachian, the grape growing region of Texas.
That is just amazing.
That's incredible.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Now, it's no disrespect to Connecticut and New Jersey. I'm just saying that's
none
a big area.
Wow.
So the way I get my grapes here is I use refrigerated trucks, reefers. And we want to chill our grapes down to almost freezing before we get them into our winery. I don't want my grapes fermenting from natural yeast. I have specially isolated yeast that produce certain flavor profiles that give me the quality and flavor of red wines that I want. Same goes for my white wines. And so this works very well. And so it adds a little extra cost to me. And Texas is a shortage of wine grapes. We have over 275 bonded wineries in the state right now, and we only have about 6,000 acres of commercial grapes. So,
wow.
You have to trust me, that's a real big shortage. We're behind about 10,000 acres. We need a minimum of 10,000 acres in addition to the state.
You've only got 6,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's right. So, we're planting every year. I think there's already 1,000 acres that's been put in the ground this year so far.
Well, that helps a lot there. So if anyone wants to really look at getting into the business, then Texas is the place to go. Get yourself some land and throw some grapes in the ground. There is a market for it.
Yes, sir. Very much so. I'm surprised yet. In fact, I'm expecting any year now that California growers are going to, somebody, California, Washington, or somewhere, is going to, the commercial growers are going to jump on that opportunity and seize it. Land is really inexpensive in Texas. It's nothing even clear, not even 10% of what you have to pay for it in California and the West Coast. So it's pretty awesome.
And that is, so all of you people out there who want to invest in something in the vineyards or something, there's your opportunity. Go to Texas, and I'm sure you can find land that's reasonable and in a good area. Put yourself some grapes in the ground, and there will be no shortage of buyers.
That's correct. They'll be lining up for it. It's a seller market. And we work very closely with our growers, but we treat them nice because we need them.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. Wow, I didn't realize that there was that type of shortage of grapes in Texas. I thought that, well, you just mentioned how big it is. I figured there would be plenty of grapes to go around to everyone.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. And the way they're able to come up with that number is the bigger wineries. We have St. Genevieve is the largest here. It produces a little over 500,000 cases of wine, just one winery. And so Llano Estacado is the next one. I don't know exactly how big they are, but they're probably a couple of 100,000 cases. And then it comes on down from there. And so I'm probably in the top 10 to 15 in size, but it drops off pretty rapidly after the top five. And so if you add up all the cases of wine that these 275 wineries are producing, it's way more than what we actually grow here. So they have to bring it in from out of state. Bringing it from New Mexico produces a lot of grapes for Texas. And, of course, California and Washington. And so that's what we have to do is fill that void and to stop our dependency on, those outer states to be able to grow it all inside.
Yeah, if you can. And I just – one of the things I've been bringing up on the program over the last couple of months, too, is the drought in California. It's really going to start affecting places all across the country because so many people do bring in grapes from California. And so that could be an issue, particularly in Texas, if you bring in a bunch of grapes. So, wow.
Yeah, and Texas is having a drought too. I think
are
water.
You?
Yes, potable water. Rainfall is really low, and the water tables are going down, and so we're very concerned. And of course, we want to make sure the government doesn't lock us out of our own water on our own land. But
yeah,
that's some of that talk has been being. Taking place, but at any rate, we're just very cognizant of the fact, and we try to conserve all the water we can, and I think that's great that we all do. Got to be as green as possible.
Oh, you almost have to now with the way the weather is. What type of soil do you have right there where you're growing? And well, the hill country is pretty good soil, but what is that soil?
Yeah, my soil is clay primarily. It's pretty shallow topsoil and clay, which holds water real well. And Blanc du Bois, it's on a basic side. It's not acidic, but basic. Got a pH of probably 7.5 to 8. And Blanc du Bois is just a very vigorous grapevine, so it really does well. Now, my site is not as good as I would like for it to be. I would rather have a little bit a deeper soil, more sandy loam for Blanc du Bois, but again, Blanc du Bois is a vigorous variety of grape, so it does well, but the tonnage, the yield per acre is not as high as I would like to have it. So, but the quality is incredible. So we get a little over two tons per acre. Yeah,
wow, that is low.
But
yeah,
it is very low. But my growers that I buy, I have contracts with 7 different Blanc du Bois growers. And, buy a majority of my Blanc du Bois from growers in South Texas and ship it in here also in refrigerated trucks. And they produce 5 and 6 tons of the acre, which is a little more commercial.
Yeah, that's...
Last year, I purchased and crushed and pressed and made into wine 69 tons of just Blanc du Bois. And we're just about sold out of it. And I'm selling Blanc du Bois bulk wine to Georgia. And we're selling our labeled wines to Georgia, too. I mean, we've been doing some consulting over there. And South Georgia, they have Pierce's disease there also. And so they've got a new, I think it's called a West Georgia, but a West Georgia Wine Growers Association. And a gentleman named Doug Mabry is kind of heading that up. And it's really exciting for them. And so they've had us come over, a couple of symposiums they put on, and given talks on Blanc du Bois winemaking and grape growing. And so... we're kind of helping their little industry come along.
Well, good. And that gets them away from the straight muscadine grapes, too, over there. That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what your weather there, your summer highs and lows, your winter highs and lows, and were you saying you're not getting the rainfall normally you do? What's the weather like there?
Well, we've been this year has been pretty different. It's been a cooler spring for longer, so we're probably about 2 weeks later this year for a predicted harvest date than we were last year. Bud break was approximately 8 to 10 days behind last year, and but on the Gulf Coast, because we have the Gulf of Mexico like you guys do, and so it's a pretty good weather mediator with warm waters, and so we get freezes during the winter time, but it's at the proper time when our vines have gone dormant, and we don't really have any spring freezes. So by the time bud break occurs, we're not in any fear of freezing, and you know, the buds, green buds off or anything like that.
Except in 2013.
So, yeah, that was on the High Plains, not down here.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I had plenty of black Spanish, Jacquet grapes. I had plenty of Blanc du Bois last year, but I didn't get any red grapes, which was all the vinifera, because we can't grow them down here.
Right.
So I had enough in barrels so far to keep me going, so I'm still selling 2012 and 2013 vintage red wines on the High Plains.
Oh,
I'm hoping it'll carry me through. We try to keep enough in barrels and tanks to just for these rainy day type situations.
Yeah, for this type of stuff. Yeah. You're using you mentioned stainless steel. You got oak or are you using
No. We use all exclusively American oak, white American oak, and my stainless steel tanks. I have, 2, 4, 8. I have 10 stainless steel tanks that add up to a little over 32,000 gallons of capacity.
Wow.
And I have a little over 300 oak barrels that we use to age our red wines and our ports and Madeiras in. Some of our Madeira wines age over 6 years.
Wow.
Age over 6 years. So they're pretty awesome. They're incredible. America has got amnesia. I don't know if you know this, Ron, but America, before the signing of the Declaration of Independence, at the time we signed it, we toasted using Madeira wine. We toasted the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes,
and we were the largest consumer of Madeira in the world before Prohibition. And when Prohibition came along, it put us out of business. So now America forgot we had a love affair with Madeira Island and their fine wines. And so we're just slowly coming back, and, you know, America has amnesia about Madeira. We don't know anything about it.
We don't know it, yeah.
America it was a large consumer, and Madeira wines will last for hundreds of years. That's why it was so popular in early American history, because it didn't need to be refrigerated, and you can open a bottle and sit around your house for a year, and it's not going to go bad. It's incredible.
That's great. Well, if people want to, you know, get into it, they can always contact you. There you go. Then we have a source for Madeira wine right here.
You betcha. We're the only winery in the state of Texas that's grandfathered to be able to use the name Madeira on our label.
Are you?
Good old American. Yep, our American government made agreement with the European Union that doesn't allow anybody else to use the name Port Sherry or Madeira. And that became effective 2006. That was the same year I got my first label approved.
On March 14th, 2006,
yeah.
Yeah. I've talked about that on the show, yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, I got my label approved 2 weeks before that deadline.
Did you? All right.
That isn't destiny. I don't know what it is. So.
That is. Are you in an AVA there? Is that part of Texas, a part of an AVA?
No, we're not. I'm in a relatively highly populated area. I'm in the country, of course, and I have acreage. I have 12 acres property on the estate. But it's not a great area to plant. For instance, you're limited. You can't grow any vinifera. So there's no reason to make an AVA here. It's just not big enough, not significant enough. I being short-sighted, but I personally don't see any advantage to declaring an AVA for the Gulf Coast of Texas right now.
Yeah,
we make great wine.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I agree. There's a lot of areas that have ABAs. I don't see any purpose, but that's just my opinion there, too. So, it seems to be. People aren't familiar with ABA. It doesn't mean anything.
I think you're right. The High Plains is incredible. So it deserves an ABA. I mean, it's 3,500 bucks. Still, there's no place in Texas. Very few in America that's like that, and it's flat. It's called a caprock. And to have 8 million acres at that same elevation, ranging from about 2,800 to 3,500 feet, and have low rainfall, it's very dry and arid, and it's incredibly rich soil. I mean, my God, it's beautiful. I mean, you needed to take that. They did. So they have a great aviation.
The same thing with Hill Country. The Hill Country what other area there? I have a blank now. But it's just there's a couple of the High Plains and the Hill Country. Those are the two that really are phenomenal growing areas. In the country, in the world, actually, they're you know just really great areas.
They're incredible, and you know when I'm out of state, and you know I've done wine tastings in New York and Washington D.C. and places like that, and people are shocked and say, man, you grow wine in Texas? And the reason they don't know about it is we consume all of it. How would they know about it? We don't have anything to tell anybody. We sell it all out here.
And that is a problem, I think, in a lot of states. Some of the states that make wines sell it right in their own state so much, and people aren't aware of what's going on out there. They know California, they know New York, and they know Washington and Oregon, but that's about it. And that's really sad because Texas has some gorgeous wines.
They really do. I'm glad you had a chance to taste some of them. They're really beautiful. I tell you what, I just myself recently, East Texas, out in Tyler, Texas, is a winery, Keepersall Cellars. I mean, they grow some fabulous red wines, and I wasn't aware of them. And, you know, this time, if you've heard of hoof and mouth disease, I've had various opportunities to be in like this, and I made a statement one time, Texas can't grow Cabernet. Well, that was the wrong thing to say, but I should have said we can, it's just difficult.
Yeah, there you go.
and it is. It is a difficult grape to grow. It takes a lot of hands-on work, but Keepersall Cellars grow some fine Cabernet and some other red wines, and there is Pierce disease in that area, and they're able to manage it and keep it off their vineyards and out of it, and they've been doing it for years.
Wow.
Very impressive. Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah, that's tough. There's Pierce disease. We've talked about Pierce disease on the program in the past, and it's a tough thing to... You can't do anything about it, and no matter what they've been trying to do, it's just something there. But, you know, they're finding more and more grapes that are starting to hold up against it and not be infected, although they can be susceptible, which, you know, it's a good thing.
Ron, they do have a spray chemical that repels the leafhopper, the vector. Imidacloprid or something like that. It's a real hairy name, but I don't use it because we can't grow vinifer down here. So, but they're able to mitigate it quite a bit, and it's systemic. And when you spray it on the vineyard, it gets in the vines, and then it repels the leafhopper, which is carrying the bacteria.
Right.
So he won't feed on it, and that's how he infects the vine. He feeds on the vine. So, there's some pretty hot areas that I see some pretty nice vinifera being grown because of this one spray chemical. Very effective.
Well, that's good. I hadn't heard that they came out with it that well yet. I know that University of Florida has also been doing a lot of work on trying to combat Pierce disease. So, you know, I hadn't heard that. So I'll have to get a hold of my people up there, talk to them. You know.
Well, and I'll share some more with you. I'm not on the inside, but I'm looking in with great interest. But out in California, UC Davis, they've been developing some hybrids like the Blanc du Bois, but they're like 97% vinifera that have, for instance, maybe only 3% of a vine like Blanc du Bois, but it has the attributes that causes Blanc du Bois to be resistant to Pierce disease. And so in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see some varieties. Now, they can't call it Cabernet, even though it's 97%.
No.
But it'll have a name of some kind, and it should produce in areas for me, for instance. I might could grow some of these varieties down here where I know I have a hot PD zone, and these vines will be resistant to it. So
and
it's on the horizon.
It tastes a lot like the caps.
That's right. And some of the other wines, you know. So we're excited. There's some nice work being done, and I think
I
we've
had
got
not
a great
heard that. That is
yeah,
exciting.
It really is.
You know, I have to follow up and check out some of that and see what I can find out on it. Because that is some exciting stuff. Because Pierce disease, I mean, it's going to be more of a problem because of global warming. I mean, it is getting warmer, and they're talking about the weather getting warmer the further north you go. So therefore, grapevines are going to be getting warmer, and that's going to mean the bug's going to move up north and carry Pierce disease with it. And so if they can find plants and grapes and stuff, that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. So it's the Dr. Andy Walker with UC Davis is the one of the gentlemen that's pretty much heading up that program. So if you want to look him up, Andy Walker, W-A-L-K-E-R.
I will do that, yes.
Fill you in on what the latest information is, and I'm interested in, you know, as soon as I've already got my name on the list to get some of the first plants released out of that program, so I'm hoping I can get some.
Yeah, I'll look him up and I'll call him or email him and see if maybe he can come on the program some night and tell us what's going on.
I bet you he would. That would be awesome. Yeah. He's incredible. He's a world-class speaker, and he gives presentations all over the world.
Yeah, that would be fun to have him on and tell us what's going on in that research. Wow, thank you very much for that bit of information there. A couple other things. Your state of Texas government and federal government, how do you feel about them? Love them, hate them, want to hug them, want to kill them?
Well, let me preface what I say is I'm not a real astute politician. I am conservative. As you know, Texas is conservative. Right. And so we're not real happy with the current government that we have. And but I believe in our system. I love America, and I will support it and die for it. I've been in the military, and I would go again if they needed me. But my man didn't get elected, and somebody else did. And so I just say, you know, the best candidate won. That's the way our system works. So we're going to work hard and try to get another person to replace this one that we have.
It hasn't affected your licensing and your operations or anything?
No, it has not. We've been very fortunate. Being the age I am, 75, three-quarters of a century sounds a lot better.
Well, actually, it sounds old either way.
Yeah, that's right. It is old, trust me. But I have a young man.
I'm 65, so I don't have much room to talk.
I forget the point I was trying to make. You'd asked me a question about the government and how we work with them.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. Yes. Okay. I'm old enough to remember how difficult some of the old regimes were. I'll give you an example. We had a convenience store. We sold beer and wine. And so we had a liquor license, and the TABC, God bless their souls, they were tough. They were like the Gestapo. I mean, if they would come into your place, they come into your business to inspect. If the door wasn't open, it would not surprise me they just kicked the door open with their foot.
Oh!
I mean, or pull guns. I mean, it was just incredible. Now, this is the old mindset. Well, that's the school I came from. So when I got into the wine business, I was expecting that type of mentality, and boy, I was pleasantly surprised. A bunch of young folks have replaced a lot of those old tough guys. And I don't know what environment they were in. You know, I'm going to cut them a little slack. I mean, maybe they were told to behave that way, to put the fear in everybody. Because everybody, you know, back when gun running and whiskey running was there, there was a lot of dangerous people in the liquor business. So, but anyway, they just really, really have been helpful. And I'm so pleased to be able to say that, report that. We have been audited. We've been open 14 years. And my winery's been audited 2 times by the federal government. It's been very pleasant. No problems. And we've passed with flying colors. We're very good record keepers. We believe in doing the right thing and obeying the laws, and we do every bit of it. And so we've come out good. at TABC the same way. Very, very helpful folks. Incredibly helpful. If we have any questions, if we have any doubts about what we're doing or what we want to do, we can call any of those agents up, and they're just, they'll go out of the way to find an answer for us.
Well,
so,
good.
Very pleased.
Quick, let me put in a quick thing here, programming note. AFRN, if you're we have AFRN as listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. If you want to pick up the rest of this, which won't be too much longer, but it'll be on archives. And, again, thanks, AFRN, for tuning in. We do appreciate it. Mike, do you have anything you'd like to ask Ray?
Oh, sorry. I had my thing muted while I'm typing. No, I'm good. I'm just I was looking at the website before. Very nice website. And, yeah, I'm going to – definitely, since you're shipped to Florida, I might actually have to try some of those that I'm looking at here. So,
yeah,
no questions here. Everything's good. Thank you.
All right.
I would like to ask the question, Ron. Is it how can I either get a copy or listen to this broadcast later?
I will send you an email on how to get a hold of this. A lot of the wineries tack it onto their website so people can just. If they want to listen to the program, they can tune in and listen to it and right through your website. So I will send you a link to this after the program and later tonight, and you should have it, and you can listen to it, and from there do whatever you want with it. Okay. Oh, my gosh, I hate this, and delete it or whatever. Whatever you want to do with it.
No. I'd like to share with our industry, with our wine industry here in Texas. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you share with it, and since you know people and all that, any other winery out there, any other Texas winery that you know, anybody wants to be on the program, I'm not done with Texas. Texas is, I mean, 275-plus bonded wineries. I mean, I want to talk to some Texas wineries. So get a hold of people and email me. Let me know. I'll send you an email.
Yeah. Well, I'm a member of the Texas Wine and Grape World Association, and we have a chat room. So when I put an email out in the chat room, there's quite a few of them know what's going on. So if you give me the link where they can go to your website or whatever and maybe listen to this replay or archive, and I'll also give them your contact information, and you'll probably be covered up with contacts.
Well, that would be great, because I'd love to talk to more Texas wineries, because the ones we've talked to, a couple, three of them, and they've all been just absolutely interesting and fascinating, and you also in that group. So, but before we leave tonight, give us all of your contact information, your email address, your Twitter, your Facebook, your LinkedIn, your address, your phone numbers, everything, so if anybody wants to get a hold of you, they can get a hold of you and order wine or check you out or visit you if they're in the area or whatever.
Okay. Twitter-wise, I'm a little bit too old to give you
me too.
All my social
Mike
media
does the Twitter.
My children do that. Starting out with our website, www.hackwine.com. That's HAAKWINE.com. My email is Raymond, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D, at hackwine.com. Pretty simple. And most all of our folks here at the winery is the first name at hackwine.com gets them. My wife is Gladys. She's our bookkeeper and chief accountant. And she's the boss. We've been married 55 years this year. I think it's going to work.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Well, I appreciate it, Ron. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And you're located in Santa Fe. Is there an address?
Yes. The address for the winery is 6310 Avenue T, like Tom, Santa Fe, Texas. Zip code is 77510. The winery phone number, area code 409-925-1401. We have all sorts of events. Our website has events listed. It's hackwine.com. We do weddings here. We did over 40 weddings last year. So
wow.
Bring your girlfriend out and walk around and sign up.
Very cool.
And it's a beautiful area there. I've been to that area of Texas, and Mike says he's wandered all over that area there. It's a gorgeous area of Texas. So.
Thank you. I was born on Galveston Island, one of those weird guys, but we don't have any control where we're born, but I was born on the island, so I had a blast.
Well, very thank you, Ray, for joining us tonight. It was wonderful, it was fantastic, and very informative. And thanks for some of the leads, Dr. Andy Walker. I will get in touch with him. And I'll give you a link, and I'll look forward to talking to some of your colleagues.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Thanks again, Ron.
Yep. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
Going.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
All right.
Our small studio audience there. My studio, there it goes. Okay. There was a delay there. Yeah, very cool. And I was going to send you an email with it. The Keeper Soul Enterprises, I pulled them up. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very good. And, yeah, all the information on the they have electronic newsletter. They have their Twitter information and the web and Facebook information. You can like their page from their website. Just make sure you spell it correctly. It's haakwine.com. haakwine.com.
Right. No S, wine.com.
Right. So very cool. I like the name. I still like the names of it. They got some interesting purple porpoise, red crab. Pink Pelican wine.
They do. I was going to ask him about those too, and I missed that.
Well, yeah.
But it was interesting information. I mean, geez, you know, mm-hmm. it's just they estimated 69 tons of Blanc de Bois last year.
Oh my! Yeah,
that's and figured that 1 ton will give you approximately just shy of 4,000 bottles.
Oh my gosh! Really? Wow.
Yeah. 1 ton of press grapes give you just shy of 4,000 bottles,
God.
Like 3,990 or something like that. Just shy of 4,000 bottles. So 69 ton.
Mm.
Well, I can't do the math in my head, but oh my.
Yeah. That's calculator math right there. So yeah,
that
very
is,
cool.
That is. That's a lot. That's a lot of wine that they're putting out there.
Yep.
So interesting. I just I'm going to have to put them on my list to get on and order a bottle or two from them.
Mm-hmm.
Their Madeira sounds fantastic. I was reading the description of that. If you haven't checked out the website, do mm-hmm. so. It is really, really some interesting wines there. So
yep, very cool. All right. Well, I don't even know what time it is.
Nothing happening at the winery this weekend.
Yeah, I noticed that. Did you skip something or did I miss something? Because last week, right?
No, not last week. It's one of those rare months where we have five Saturdays instead of four.
Oh.
So we had our festival on the second, and the third and fourth we skipped, and then the last one next weekend we'll have a festival. So it's just like I say, one of those rare instances where we have two Saturdays with nothing going on. So which is okay. It's nice to get the little break, and it's going to be Memorial Day weekend, and so everyone out there, remember Sunday is National Wine Day again. So enjoy yourself some wine on Sunday, and
or every day.
Or every day, just Sunday.
You don't have to wait till Sunday.
That's right. Thank you. Every day.
Yeah, but one glass I have a year.
Yeah. Oh, it's wine day. I can have my wine now. No.
That's right. No. Anytime. Okay. Well, all right. I guess if we have nothing else, did you have any last minute? I saw that post from Irene on the Facebook page. She likes the real estate segment, so we're still trying to get in touch with somebody who's in the wine real estate.
Yes, I sent out another email the other day, and I didn't get a response. I don't know why these real estate agents, I think if I sold real estate, I would do every venue I possibly could to get people and possibly interested, but hey, but I don't know. Yeah, it's that real estate side is fun. And again, like Raymond just said, Texas is looking for growers of grapes. So anybody out there who wants to invest in some vineyards, looks like Texas might be a good place to go up in the hill country and get yourself some acreage. And it's just beautiful weather up there too, and,
yep.
And then you call yourself a Texan.
There's a little bit more to that, than that, but
yeah, I think so.
You have to own cattle. You have to, own boots, jeans,
the boots,
and,
a hat,
the 10-gallon, So, all right. And I used to have all that stuff. That's amazing. When I moved to Florida, I got rid of all that. But I used to. Oh yeah.
Then you get your flip flops and your shorts.
Now I have my. That's right. I was Floridanized.
That's right. It happens all of us.
Yep. Okay. Oh, I guess we'll be back next Thursday. That would be May the 29th at 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio or AFRN whenever you listen to us. They were on 2 days a week last time I checked, but it's like Tuesdays and Thursdays. So that
was
cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we'll try to get Texas again. I'll send out a thing to Raymond here and let him connect a link to him and all the information so people can get a hold of me. And with any luck, people will start flowing in from Texas, and maybe we'll sell some more wineries here.
Yeah, very cool. And, we can always come back to it, too. There's a couple of states we've heard from that kind of missed us the first round. So, if we need to come back, we can. But it's always good to do it while we're covering it, and we just go on. Sounds good. We'll see everybody next week, Thursday, the 29th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio on All About Wine. If you have any questions or anything, contact the show, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's anytime, and Ron gets those, and he'll be able to respond. You want to be a guest, you have a question, you want to comment, whatever, send an email to that address, and you won't be added to some kind of newsletter thing or anything. It's just an email type of, deal, so don't worry about that. But, and let us know what we can do. So there you go. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks again for tuning in.
Have yourself a safe weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very busy weekend. So happy Memorial Day. Yeah, there we go.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.